hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everybody is having a terrific day today. We actually have some beautiful weather down here in Florida, which is fantastic. A lot of news stories to cover. How are you doing today, Deb?
Austin, I'm absolutely blessed. I mean, the weather here is stunning. It's about 75, 80 degrees, clear blue skies, light sea breeze. Just beautiful. It's what we used to have in Florida all the time as we started messing around with our weather. But I wanted to start off with a health story today. A new study came out that says coconut oil. This is our MCT coconut oil that we have at the office. The same type of product. It helps prevent macular degeneration, and it's supposed to be healthy for the eyes. The study was done back in 2018 that basically said that it actually helped reverse naturally problems associated with macular degeneration. The healthy ingredient this study tested on was coconut oil. The study was conducted by Niagara's University, the Orange Department of Physiology. And the final report titled Coconut Oil Protects Against Light-Induced Retina Degeneration in Male Wistar Rats was published by the Journal of Pathophysiology. Now, the big thing about this is that the photoreceptors in the retinal pigment are basically parts of the retina that are most susceptible to visible light. And injury to these parts plays a crucial role in the pathogenesis of retinal degenerative diseases, such as AMD and the parts of the retina that are most susceptible to visible light. Injury to these parts plays a crucial role in the pathogenesis of retinal degenerative diseases, such as age-related macular degeneration. And it's saying that the pure MCT virgin coconut oil is made up of 50% lauric acid and is the most effective constituent of it. Beneficial fatty acids such as palmitic, oleic, leoic, but a bunch of different acids are in there, liquid oils. And several of these compounds are proven to exert an antioxidant activity, and the research literature showed evidence of neuroprotective aspects. I wanted to cover that story with you because I just had a phone call from one of our suppliers, and he's been diagnosed now, he's my age, with macular degeneration. And it's a major, major problem. You have the dry macular degeneration, which he's been dealing with, and the wet macular degeneration. And a lot of studies now have come out and said that aspirin may be one of the primary causes of wet macular degeneration because it's such a good blood thinner that it causes that retina to detach at the back of the eye. That's the wet macular degeneration. So, guys, it's one of those things we really need to be thinking about what we're doing when we start taking these prescription, non-prescription and the prescription NSAIDs every single day, and what it does to the cardiovascular system with the increased risks of heart disease and what it does to the eyesight. I mean, we have so many clinics now all over the United States that are dealing with kidney dialysis centers, primarily from statin drugs as far as I'm concerned and what they do to the kidneys. Also, we have all these people now that I believe are having wet macular degeneration, so many of them, because we have tens of millions of people taking aspirin every single day. And there's always natural approaches to all of this stuff in order to make sure that you stay healthy. By the way, Ruth Bader Ginsburg did not appear at the State of the Union address the other night. However, she was available at one concert the other night, or at least a body double was, with no photos being taken of her, no interviews and no comments from her. Personally, I don't believe that it was her. I believe it was a body double. And I believe, and I told you this a couple of weeks ago, I would have to have full verification of life support that she's on. I'd have to see her. So, I mean, fingerprints the whole bit to make sure it was her. Because quite frankly, they used too many body doubles. And not that I'm, you know, sad this woman's no longer going to be on the Supreme Court, because as far as I'm concerned, ding dong, she's gone. But reality is, something's going on with Ginsburg. If I was Trump, of course, Trump's being controlled by the deep state, so it doesn't make any difference. He already knows he could do this. I would send in a Secret Service detachment into her hospital or into her room or wherever she is just to verify she's even alive and not on some type of respirator. It's actually cognitive and conscious. That's what I would do. But that would be me being the president of the United States. But I would also bulldoze the Lincoln Memorial, Austin. So what do you think, bud?
I'd also bulldoze the United Nations building as well, no doubt about it.
I would implode that one.
Yeah, the thing about it is, through, I think if you kind of awake, at least partially awake, and you realize what happened a couple weeks ago when ABC, I think it was ABC Morning News, maybe NBC, I think it was ABC though, and they posted a memorial thing up, basically saying that, you know, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Ginsburg has died. Here's her time of death. Here's basically her date she was born, date she was
dead. And all of a sudden they yoke it down and say, oh, we're so sorry. That was an accident. We didn't mean to put that up. It's completely false. She's perfectly alive and okay. Just a technical error. First off, guys, I operate a website. I operate a business. You don't just accidentally put together somebody's death and somebody's announcement that they've died and accidentally put it up on the front screen. Those don't just accidentally happen. Somebody was just playing around and said, oh, whoops, I pushed the wrong key. It posted that up by accident. You had to spend a considerable amount of time, A, to put the graphics together, B, to have it proofread to make sure the dates were correct, C, to make sure all the information coincided with the day that you're going to present it on television, and also D, make sure that everything is approved before you punch clear. And to me, what it seemed to be happening is somebody got an early update from a news outlet, journalist probably got the information firsthand and said, listen, this just happened. We need to be the first to break it. She's checked out. We're going to have an open seat on basically the Supreme Court. This needs to go up ASAP. And all of a sudden, they were about to pull the trigger on. They got a phone call from somebody well above their pay grade. It said, do not post this. And they said, whoops, we just posted it. They said, take it down now. And they went, okay, we'll take it down. Here's a retraction. We didn't mean to do it. She's perfectly fine. Nothing to see here. Keep going on. Guys, it was kind of like, remember last year, I think it was 2 years ago, year and a half ago, when all of a sudden Hawaii did that full-blown emergency announcement, said we have incoming ballistic nuclear missiles from North Korea. Hunker in place. We'll have impact shortly, within seconds. This is not a drill. And all of a sudden they came out a few minutes later and said, we're sorry. That was an accident. Somebody pushed the wrong key. We don't know how that happened. Nothing to see here. Don't worry about that. An hour later, and everybody goes, okay, are we actually going to die or not? do we have nuclear missiles incoming to Hawaii or not? Because that kind of seemed like a big deal just to make an accident. And as we reported after that incident as well, when you put out full-blown non-test, these are essentially, this is a nuclear test, this is a nuclear exchange that we're about to have happen, those things don't just get posted up immediately. You have to have multiple approval, multiple keys, and everybody has to do it right now. So when stuff like that happen, it just kind of makes me chuckle. So in my opinion, if she actually is still alive, which I don't even think she is, if she is, though, I think she's on a full-blown lung respirator. They're just keeping her heart pumping and keeping her lungs pumping. So if something occurs, they can basically say, she's still alive. You know, we'll get a hold of her shortly, something like that. Also, too, in other news, and not to be surprised, as the states around that are controlled by the hardcore leftists are continuing to not only try to invade your privacy, they want to take your guns away from you as well. As you guys remember, about 2 months ago, New York came out and they had a bill that they were working on that was going to require police to scrutinize your social media activity and online searches if you applied for a handgun license applicant, and was going to disqualify you if they saw anything that they believed to be basically not cool. They thought, hey, this guy posted something 5 years ago in an argument on Facebook. We're going to decline him from being able to own a firearm. Well, now, of course, Illinois' Representative Daniel DeDitch, Democrat, of course, is now proposing gun buyers have to reveal their public social media accounts to Illinois police before they are approved for a firearm license, and allow law enforcement to search every aspect of their social media for the last 3 years before they approve it. Pro-gun groups are outraged. ACLU is even outraged about it, as they came out and said the bill doesn't say anything about how this list will be retained or for how long and what it might be used for. First Amendment group worries police scanning social media may show bias. They said of personal political beliefs, personal religious beliefs, things that should not play a part in whether somebody gets a FOID card. You already get a card to purchase a firearm. But what nobody is saying is that, flat out, it is an absolute direct violation to prevent a law-abiding citizen from owning a firearm. So putting a caveat and having permission from the state, basically saying, you're a good little slave, you haven't said anything that we disagree with you on, as long as you keep your mouth shut and self-censor yourself and don't say anything that we don't approve of, we'll allow you to have your firearm, we'll allow you to have your little FOID card, We'll allow you to be able to own a gun, but if you do anything that we don't approve of, we're going to take that license from you because you're a bad, bad person, and you said something you shouldn't have, and that takes the right of way from you to be able to own a firearm. Guys, this is something that everybody has to realize. Any law that directly violates the Second Amendment and prevents you from owning a firearm is in direct violation of constitutional law. So stop playing this game with these hardcore Democrats and coming up with these, oh, we need common sense gun laws, you know? They're just the common sense. If somebody says something that angers somebody, we should be able to steal your firearms, and you got to prove you're innocent so you can get them back. That's common sense gun law, right? No, that's tyranny. That is absolute 100% tyranny and direct violation of constitutional law. It is not okay. It is not cool. It is not something we can be okay with. I have been incredibly boisterous after they passed this crap down here in Florida with our old governor that we had down here, Rick Scott. And this is not something that's okay in any type of constitutional republic, especially when you have the Second Amendment granting the right to keep and bear arms freely. There is no excuse. There is no restriction. There is no FOID card. There is no, I need to make sure that you're a good little servant and your social media is okay. None of that is okay whatsoever. Also, too, in other news, is Australia is very liberal, as you guys know. Apparently, though, the Australian Prime Minister advisor has called out the United Nations. This was a pretty big article that I saw, and this was from a ways back, but this is why I'm bringing it up again, because so many people are going out and talking about how, you know, these things have gone on, these things are, you know, the United Nations needs to do this Green Deal, especially with Cortez, which I'm going to talk about in a second. But if you guys remember, Maurice Newman, who was a chief business advisor to the prime minister a few years ago, blatantly said this is not about facts or logic with these Green Deals. It is about a new world order under the control of the United Nations. It is opposed to capitalism and freedom, and has made an environmental catastrophe a household topic to achieve their objective. The real agenda is concentrated political authority. Global warming is a hoax. The UN is extremely well-funded, and they have a hugely powerful ally in the United States. And obviously, they have their entire United Nations facility in New York. The reason why I tie into that from a few years back is that now Cortez has released her resolution outlining the new Green Deal that she is so excited about. First off, she wants to completely rid the entire country of any nuclear power, 100% within the next 10 years, wants all vehicles to be 100% green in the next 10 years, wants to be able to have electric trains essentially for only means of transportation in the next 10 years. Planes are still a question, because I'm still trying to figure out how we're supposed to use planes if she wants zero emissions and 100% green. She goes on to say now that the 10-year national mobilization towards a series of goals is to fight global warming. This includes getting all of our energy from clean, renewable, zero-emission energy sources, including, she wants to add, is family-sustaining wage and essentially income for all, medical leave, paid vacations for all, retirement security for all, high-quality health care benefits for all Americans. The resolution also calls for repairing historical oppression, which everybody has already called her out on, which blatantly is code for reparations, basically slave reparations, among certain groups she classifies as minorities and immigrants, which I don't understand how giving reparations to immigrants has to do with anything with a Green Deal. But this is why I'm bringing this up, is because I called this out a couple weeks ago on our show and on the Hagmann Show. I said when she comes out with this deal, it is going to be completely and totally focused on making sure the United Nations by 2030 has everything in place and exactly what she has outlined here with her socialist communist agenda, all the way to completely preventing the ability for free market capitalism and providing income for all, health care for all, retirement for all, free everything for all, which I still don't know how she plans on funding that, especially once you start nationalizing corporations and you basically start taking over and controlling them, how you're supposed to essentially feed, clothe, house, educate, hospital bill pay for 330 million Americans in this country. I really don't know how she plans to do all that, but in my opinion, it's not that she actually thinks she can do it. She may, because she's so stupid, but it's more of the fact, in my opinion, that the United Nations has to get this type of information in the system to get these bills rolling, because we know nothing's going to happen the next year, 2 years with this. This bill is going nowhere. Trump's never going to sign anything like this. As he already said the other day, United States is not a socialist nation. If he gets reelected in 2020, maybe, maybe not, I have no idea, he probably isn't going to sign this garbage either because it's so hardcore. But by 2024, we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do as far as if somebody gets elected, because if we get some hardcore leftists like Pelosi or even an individual like Cortez in power, they will try to force this stuff into law, which will increase massive taxation on anybody who wants to exercise their ability to travel freely, unmolested on their way in a normal vehicle, or wants to do anything that essentially is invoked by a carbon tax, which they've already said 500, 600, 1,000% taxes on a lot of this stuff. If you want to use it, if you want to use a vehicle, you can use it. The fuel's going to be $150 a gallon to drive, so that'll cut down on your emissions, and that'll make sure you pay your fair share at $150 a gallon. You know how quickly people are going to stop driving vehicles and switch over to the autonomous, fully tracked, fully monitored, fully controlled electric vehicles pretty quickly. And one thing that I've already told you guys about the other day with electric vehicles that nobody seems to address, including Cortez, batteries don't operate in freezing cold weather. Tesla models have already had numerous problems up north where the door handles won't even open because they're electronically operated. Multiple electric vehicles have already been reported up there, not even starting, or going for a very short period and breaking down, or not being able to charge properly, completely locking up and not even being able to do anything with them. That is a problem that nobody wants to address with electric vehicles. So that's what's going on with her, and I just felt that I needed to address that again, as she has blatantly made it clear that she wants to follow the United Nations Agenda 2030, Dad.
You know, Austin, I think she must sit around in the light smoking crack. I mean, she's got to be smoking crack. She got a little crack pipe, little crack hat, little crack button, little thing that says, I love crack. I mean, you know, I mean, she's got to be doing something, because nobody in their right mind would say that no more air traffic by 2030. What are we going back to, 1850? And she also wants to basically stop cow production because of flatulence and stop beef production. I mean, I don't know where this girl was educated, if she even is educated. I mean, she's just a hardcore leftist Hispanic Jewish woman who basically wants to do whatever she wants to do whenever she wants to do it and say whatever her mouth. She has no filtration. Her it goes right from her brain to her mouth without going through any type of reasoning center. She's lost the ability to have common reasoning skills associated with her verbal behavior. And I know people like this, both men and women, Jewish, Christian, Hindu, Muslim, doesn't make a difference who they are. They basically blah, 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 whatever something comes to their mouth, they just say it, no thinking about how they're going to pay for it. It's already been shown. If you tax the rich people, the 1%, the really rich people, at 100% of their income, it won't make a dent in the national debt deficit. It doesn't make a dent. It's, you know, you got $1 trillion a year coming in. And a lot of these guys are just basically got money coming in from, you know, from stocks or bonds or dividend distribution or whatever they're doing. They don't have jobs. I mean, somebody's making, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20, $30, $50, $100 million a year. Very rarely do they have a job they go to. They don't punch a clock. I mean, they're the CEOs or the presidents or the founders of the corporations. And if you tax them at 100%, they're just going to find ways to bury the money into plant and equipment or expansion and not pay you anything anyhow. So it doesn't make a difference. This reminds me so much of the movies that were done a few years ago in the book that was written by Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged, in which you take the incentive away from the manufacturing productive citizens that actually get things done, and you just take it away, and you basically say, we have to have everybody pay their fair share, which means that you guys have to pay 100%. And it's crazy. Years ago, I had a workout partner. He's a black guy, good friend of mine. He's a pastor. Still talk to him. Had a party here at Christmas time, invited him and his family to the house. They came over for a party that we had, and we had a group of people here from, you know, just locally. And, I still remember when he told me that, you know, that white people should be paying slave reparations, that I should be paying slave reparations. And I told him, it's like 15, 16 years ago now, probably closer to 20 years ago now. I laughed at him. I just laughed. And I said, why do you think I should have to pay slave reparations? And he goes, I said, my parents were from Germany. I said, now, you know, mind you, we did some bad things, you know, especially to a lot of the Christians and the Jews and other people and the Catholics. And, you know, a lot of things happened in Germany that were bad. I said, but we really weren't going after blacks. I said, that didn't happen over there. I said, why should I pay slave reparations to you? And his response was basically, well, you live in this country and it was built on the backs of slaves. I said, well, so do you. He goes, what do you mean? I said, so do you. I said, do you want to go back to Africa? I said, I don't want to go back to Africa. I don't want to live over there. I said, it's awful. I said, I'm not saying that what was done for 400 years of the slave trade was okay. It was awful. It was horrible. But guys, it was hundreds of years ago, and it's not something that we're really dealing with today, even though there is still a slave trade globally. People are still being sold into slave, and nobody wants to talk slavery, but nobody wants to talk about that, especially sex slavery. And so I told him, I said, so, you know, this is the kind of thing that these kind of discussions we have to have. We have to talk about this because, quite frankly, we all live in this country and we all are benefited of this country. It's like, you know, it's like now Pocahontas there, Elizabeth Warren, you know, she put down she was an American Indian to get into Harvard and Penn State and go into Ivy League schools. And because it allowed her as a woman being an Indian to be one of the minor minorities, which allowed her basically to get into these graduate level programs that she probably never would have been accepted into. Now, I talked about this some yesterday. That's why she did it. And the problem is nobody wants to talk about that. Why? Because she's a Democrat. And the Democrats promote affirmative action. And this is what's so frustrating to me, Austin. We have all of these people now that have been accepted to medical schools and law schools all around the country whose grades don't indicate they should have gone simply because of their race or because of their background or because of historical things that happened to them that they had no record of whatsoever in the past. Like, you know, I can't, if I was an American Indian, I'd be proud I was an American Indian. If I was black, I'd be proud I was black. If I was Hispanic, I'd be proud I was Hispanic. I happen to be white, Caucasian, European. I'm proud I'm white, Caucasian, European. And the problem is I didn't ask to be a white, Caucasian, European, but these people are asked or basically given special treatment, affirmative action, because of their color. It doesn't make any difference in what they do. And I've said this, I'm going to say it again, because I haven't talked about this in a long time. Because of what's happened in the past with slave reparations, et cetera, and what's happened, you know, with slavery, and what's happened with the persecution of the blacks in this country with the KKK through the Democratic Party, I may add, and what happened with Margaret Sanger and wanting to kill all the blacks, all of that stuff. I feel sorry for the blacks who went through that. Some of them are still alive. Some of them were sterilized. Some of them had syphilis and all kinds of other diseases put on them to see what it would do to them. I mean, what a bunch of sickos to do that to human beings. Here's the thing. I'm going to say this again. If I'm applying and I've got a 4.0 GPA and I'm applying to Harvard, and a black person that's a 4.0 GPA and is applying to Harvard, and we make the same score on the LSAT or the MCAT, go ahead and take him. I don't care. Don't care. Don't care because, quite frankly, I'll be able to get into another good school anyhow. Doesn't make a difference. Why? Because I have that much compassion for them of what happened to them in the past. But not when someone has a 2.0 GPA, and I have a 4.0 GPA, which I don't, by the way. Which I dated too many girls that have 4.0 GPA. But if with a 4.0 GPA, you know, it's just let's do what's right. But guys, but when you have people like Elizabeth Warren who intentionally abuse the system and put down something that she's not on an application to an Ivy League school, let's call her out for what she did. Oh, well, it was from historical records and things I heard from my family. No, it's not. It was a straight-up lie that you did. I mean, you're in your 60s, you're almost 70 years old now, so who cares? Whatever. Just own what you did and walk away. But she knows if she owns what she did, she'll probably never be reelected. By the way, Karen Rogers sent me a really good article that she really helps me a lot, along with Brad and Matthew and Mark. A lot of guys really helped me a lot as far as getting information for the show. And she sent me an article about what's going on with the Catholic Church and what's going on with the Muslims. And I'm going to read this to you. Yeah, this is Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tabib is considered the most important imam in Sunni Islam, and he just signed this covenant with the Pope in front of a global audience of religious leaders from Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and other faiths. The document calls for peace between nations, religions, and races. They made sure all religions were represented at the ceremony in Abu Dhabi. This is just another step towards the one world religion. There's a lot of language about peace, as well as referring to God in the name of God or Allah as the God of Christianity, as well as it says that God willed this diversity of religions and that all these religions are acceptable in his sight. This is not true. This is heresy. Here's a quote. Freedom is the right of every person. Each individual enjoys the freedom of belief, thought, expression, and action. The pluralism and the diversity of religions occur, color, sex, race, and language, because they're willed by God and his wisdom through which he created human beings. This divine wisdom is the source from which the right to freedom of belief and freedom to be different derives. Therefore, the fact that people are forced to adhere to a certain religion or culture must be rejected, excuse me, as to the imposition of a cultural way of life that others do not accept. In other words, what he's saying is that God accepts you from every religion that you're involved in, regardless of that. Now, I read the entire thing. It is actually posted on the Vatican website. You guys can look it up. And if you go to Vatican.va, it goes into detail, and it says, the apostolic journey of His Holiness Pope Francis to the United Arab Emirates, 3rd of February 2019, a document on human fraternity for world peace and living together. Here's the introduction. Well, I read you part of it. But here's what it doesn't talk about. It talks about in the name of God who's created all human beings and equal. Now, it never mentions Jesus. It never mentions Yeshua. It never mentions anything about Christ. It never mentions anything about the cross. It never talks about the blood of the Lamb. It never talks about the new covenant. It never talks about any of it. Why? Because of this ecumenical movement that started back in the 60s and the 70s, really got its groove on, so to speak, in the 70s and 80s, and now has come full circle, and we've talked about it so many times. And again, our show is one of the only shows that has actually said something about this and what's going on. It's to bring Judaism, Christianity together, and basically Muslims together, and make Jesus a minor prophet, in which God is the one who's going to be glorified, you know, our Father God, but these guys don't have the same God. And so it's pushing us to a one world religion. Guys, I don't know how to sound the alarm any louder than I am right now about this. I sent this to several of my friends yesterday. One of them said, oh, wow, this is really, really good information. I'm really glad you sent me this. I'm glad to know how they feel and what they're doing. Another person said, this is complete nonsense. I'm not reading this. I turned off the video after 5 minutes. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, okay, that's nice. Guys, why don't we do the ostrich thing here, okay? Why don't we all stick our heads in the sand and pretend like they don't want the new world religion under Lucifer? Let's just pretend like they're not assigning Jesus to a minor prophet role. Why don't we just pretend like all of this is okay? And that's what all the churches are doing now, these big, huge congregations that are running around with 20, 30, 40,000 members saying, everybody's fine, I've got gays and Muslims and Jewish folks and everybody else going to my church. As far as I'm concerned, they're all saved. Wait a minute. If you really think that Jesus Christ was a demon-possessed sorcerer, nah, you're not saved. If you really think the Virgin Mary was a whore, you're not saved, okay? If you really think that Jesus was a minor prophet and Muhammad was above him, not saved. You gotta realize, if you think that Jesus Christ and Lucifer were brothers, not saved. I mean, guys, there's so many religions out there that believe these weird things. Let me tell you something, guys, and you guys know me. You've known me for years now. It's about the blood. It's about the blood of the Lamb. It's about the frequency that it generates. It's about the field of energy that we have through the Holy Spirit that comes into us through the blood of the Lamb in covenant with God Almighty in His dimension through the blood of the Lamb, through Christ. You don't get that with anybody else. I got a newsflash for everybody listening today from other religions. Muhammad is dead. Been dead a long time. And oh, by the way, just thought I'd mention that to you. And by the way, the Messiah has already shown up. And if you missed him, you still need to hop aboard. I mean, so you got to remember, Buddha's dead. All these Hindu gods, they think everything's a god. They're all dead too. They're inanimate objects. We serve the living God with his living Son, who was raised from the dead by the power of God himself, who serves as an everlasting covenant for us to bring us to God through his Holy Spirit. Now, guys, that's what it is. So when all these guys are telling you, well, you can have it this way, no. All they want is to slowly bring the Muslims in this ecumenical movement, slowly bring the Jews into the ecumenical movement, make Jesus a minor prophet, make Muhammad a minor prophet, have this one world religion under Lucifer worshiping the Antichrist. Guys, we got to see it. You know, I mean, I could sit here and I could go off on all these other crazy news stories that are happening, but this was a big deal that the Pope met with these guys and did this. It's a huge, huge, huge deal. Another pretty big deal is this. Russia's now demanding the U.S. destroy Tomahawk missile launch pads and attack drones to comply with nuclear treaties. These are kind of mid-range weapons, and they kind of ignored them for a long time. This is something that's interesting. Russia is really, really now heating up the rhetoric. They're now accusing the U.S. of violating the Intermediate Range Forces Treaty and has demanded to destroy all Tomahawk missile launch pads and attack drones, you know, with their Hellfire missiles. During a meeting, a U.S. diplomat and Russian Defense Ministry official, Russia accused the U.S. of violating the treaty and called on the U.S. to dismantle its attack drones and cruise missile launch pads in order to comply with the treaty. Let's not even talk about the doggone launch pads of Tomahawk missiles from carriers and from ships and from naval vessels and all the stuff that can be moved around closer to your ports. Guys, this is a major deal. These guys are really, really, really talking rhetoric now because they really want to bring in this new world order and this third world war. I just say to you guys very, very, very clearly that we need to pay attention to what's going on. We have to understand who these people are. I mean, last week, we basically had Gerald Celente on, and he talked about the different people like Elliot Abrams, who's a controversial neoconservative figure who was entangled in the Iran-Contra affair. And he's now been named as a Trump administration special envoy overseeing policy towards Venezuela. Now, Elliot Abrams had to be pardoned by Bush. I mean, this guy was basically convicted with Iran-Contra. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, he's an insider's insider. And we've got all of these guys now that Trump is putting in. We got to face the facts, guys. And I just, you know, he did a good job on his speech. Not knocking that. I told you all that yesterday. If you didn't listen to yesterday's show, you need to do it. But Donald Trump has surrounded himself with the dregs of government. This is a partial quote from Chuck Baldwin. He has surrounded himself with the dregs of government. He has put every lowlife, scoundrel, international banking cartel, Rothschild, Goldman Sachs, CFR member you can get in his administration. He's given a sedine list of warmongers, globalists, Zionists, CFR elitists, and stop making excuses for Trump by saying he doesn't realize what he's doing. I got a guy right now who I'd love to have on the show, has been on here multiple times, keeps making these excuses that Trump basically doesn't know what he's doing and he's being basically, you know, hoodwinked, you know, and quite frankly, that's complete garbage. He knows exactly what he's doing. And like every recent president before him, Donald Trump has become a robot of the globalist deep state. Okay, this group of international banking cartels, these Sabbatine, Kabbalist, Luciferian, Khazarians that enrich themselves off the spoils of perpetual war. And Trump is all too happy to oblige him and them with yet another foreign war. And now they want to start off on Venezuela, which is gold-rich and oil-rich, largest oil reserves in the world. And he's bringing this Elliot Abrams, who's absolute, a complete, and we're talking hardcore heathen. And it's just happening. I mean, right now, in Libya, look what happened in Libya. For those who don't remember, nearly the exact same tactics took place when the U.S. invaded Libya and turned it from a bastion of hope, the number one country in Africa, into a terror-infused hell state in which human slaves are now openly sold in public. That's what we have in Libya. That's what good old Hillary Clinton and Barack the gay Kenyan and his transgender wife brought to us. That's what they did. That's who they did. That's what they did to Libya. And God, Gaddafi warned us, if you take out Libya, you're going to have a massive influx of all these Africans coming through my country to go into Europe, and you're going to be overwhelmed by what you're going to find out, which is exactly the goal. The goal was to overwhelm them and do this. And guys, it's so important that we understand that the State of the Union address, it's a happy, happy, I feel great, you feel great. It's basically a show. It's a complete and total circus act to make people feel comfortable and happy that their big government is run by big, fat liars, and it's facade. It's pure theater, guys. Nothing more than the year's biggest television con job. No matter which president is doing the talking, this is what's being said to you. And guys, and it's so important that we understand that. Trump talks about ending endless wars, but he doesn't mean it. In fact, he doesn't do it. In fact, now he's staying in Syria. In fact, he's escalated an expanded war and military conflict all over the world. And he's expanded U.S. military bases globally. And he's increased Afghan heroin production from 500 square miles to 1,000 square miles. And these bases in Eastern Europe are expanding all over the place against Russia. He exploded the growth of taxpayer dollars for the U.S., also known as New World Order tax machine, and he basically significantly increased the amount of bombs that America has dropped. We've killed thousands and thousands of innocent civilians around the world, millions since 1991, and Trump drops a bomb literally somewhere in the world every 12 minutes. And all this rhetoric aside, Trump again has told us he's not removing U.S. forces from Syria or Afghanistan or from Iraq unless he replaces them with even worse soldiers of fortune, mercenaries, which can be brought in. So guys, we've got a major problem here in the United States with people being asleep and not knowing what's really going on. And the media just gives them their pabulum and they say, here's what you get to do. Here's how you get to live. Here's what you get to get. This is what you get to say to you, you know, as far as making you happy. By the way, Cruz now, by the way, Ted Cruz, the most hated senator in Washington, D.C., who is pretty much completely funded by Goldman Sachs for his campaign, says the U.S. must ensure military force to destroy Iran's nuclear program. Guys, these guys, they really want to take out Iran. They got it bad for Iran because Iran doesn't have a central bank, and they got to get the Rothschild boys' central bank in there so they can seize everything in their country. Just give them a few years, they'll own everything. And they want to get the oil reserves. And plus, Israel and Iran have really got this thing that they hate each other. And that doesn't seem strange to you guys. You got the Jews hating the Muslims in Iran, but you got the Jews loving the Arabs in Saudi Arabia. Think that through for me for just a second. Why is that like that? Why? Well, I'm glad you asked. Here's why. Because after the Ottoman Empire fell, Saudi Arabia was formed by the same group of people that formed Israel, and they've been staunch allies since then. It's what happened, you know, when the forming of Israel and the fall of the Ottoman Empire. But why couldn't they have been staunch allies with Iran? Oh, that's right, because the Iran wasn't doing their bidding and wasn't basically their, how should I say this? I'll just use the B word. Iran won't be the B word because the B word won't let them to put a central bank into Iran and take over their oil reserves. Guys, it's always the boogeyman. Libya was the boogeyman. Egypt was the boogeyman. Syria was the boogeyman. Iraq was the boogeyman. Afghanistan was the boogeyman. When you have an endless war on terrorism with no defined enemy combatants, it never, ever changes. Just thought I'd mention that to you, Austin. What do you think?
No, that's exactly what it is. Also, too, in other news as well, I've seen this all day, and I've seen a lot of comments on it, and I've looked at stuff. Wells Fargo has pretty much had widespread outages affecting ATMs, mobile banking, online banking. Pretty much everything around them has been collapsing. I've looked at a lot of the comments that have been posted up on Down Detector and other sites. One guy even claimed that he was missing $600 from his account. Multiple people have said they haven't been able to check or sign in anything. They're getting all types of non-secure pop-ups right now, and Wells Fargo's come out and now said they're working to fix intermittent outages, but and I'm sure they eventually will, but I'm not a fan of Wells Fargo anyways. But what reason why I bring that up is because it's really, really crucial that you always have some type of backup funds at your disposal on your person or accessible to your person at your house in a safe area. I tell this to people all the time, and I don't mean running around, you know, with $10,000 in cash. I don't mean that. But always have some type of, at least, you know, some cash with you a little bit, even if it's just, you know, $30, $40, $50, to have in a backup emergency in the case that something like this happens. Because there's definitely no question about it. These things, the more electronically, you know, reliant we become, they're going to start happening more and more and more and more and more and more now. And in my opinion, this is going to be one of the excuses the globalists will use to usher in a one-world digital currency, because they'll say, listen, that way you always have access to it. We'll implant the chip in your arm or wherever you want it. You can scan stuff. It won't be an issue. You won't have to worry about it. In all reality, it's going to be a complete and total lie. But I've looked at a couple articles, and I've kind of compiled a few things here on some of the top skills for surviving something if we have a bank shutdown, if we have a collapse, if we have an extended issue, like any type of incident, even if it's an earthquake. I've had a lot of people email me over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and I've kind of answered briefly on some emails. And so today, I mean, I put together a real short synopsis on, in my opinion, a lot of tips on what you can do to make your life a lot easier and a lot more efficient if something were to occur like Wells Fargo today, and it was on a U.S. basis or even a global basis, and everything shut down. And I ask people that, if everything shut down right now, the bank shut down, the phone shut down, the power shut down, and you're basically standing there with a car, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, if it's an EMP, your vehicle runs okay, good, if it doesn't, you're on foot, what do you have in your physical possession right now to get back to your home? And once you get back to your home, how do you handle the situation from there? The first thing I always tell people is preparing and building a good food and water stockpile and adapting to things before they happen. You're going to have to be flexible and think outside of the box. It's going to reach a point where paper money has no value. Instead, commodities like food, hygiene, skills become the new dollar. However, at the beginning, cash will still be king for a short period of time. At least for a few days, people will still readily accept cash until they realize it's not going to work anymore. We've seen that here in areas when we've had hurricanes. Power's gone out for 6, 7, 8, 9 days. People still accepted cash for that point. So it's kind of a template to base off of. I factor in cash would still be useful for about 1 to 2 weeks max. After about 2 weeks, people can't get supplies anymore. Things that are valuable are going to start becoming more valuable, like real value. Silver and gold at that point would start taking over as more of a trading currency, and then it kind of starts going over to sustaining items, food, water, first aid, clothes, shoes, so forth. But the first thing I always recommend is having stored water first. Absolutely. The easiest way for me to do it is I store distilled water in glass jugs, 1 gallon jugs that I use, and I put a little bit of our colloidal silver and I put a little bit of our Aquatrace in them. Has the mineral balance perfect, has silver in it to make sure there's no bacteria growth. You pretty much throw them in a closet and they're good to go. I use old apple juice containers that we have, glass jars, but you can use pretty much anything for that. Bottled water can be a backup. I don't recommend it because it's got BPA. However, if it's coming down to water, you need water, you need water. Also then water filtration or homemade or bought water filtration system. You can even put stuff together online if you have to use something like that, but always have a backup water filtration system as a last-ditch effort. Also, too, the first thing you want to start doing is making sure you're being more resourceful, even if it comes to scavenging things. You want to make sure that, obviously, trash pickup's going to stop. We saw that here when the hurricanes hit. Trash stopped. You got to start figuring out what you do with your waste. So the easiest thing to do is separate true trash and dispose safely, figure out what you're going to do with that, and then take scavenged items and put them aside, things that you could possibly use, things that you could use for basically whether it be a shelter, for, you know, going around, even feeding animals. I know a lot of times everybody does. We all waste food. Everybody's waste food. You may not finish it, or your kids don't finish it, or you leave food in the fridge for a couple days. You don't want to eat it anymore. You throw it in the trash. Well, if you have chickens, if you have goats, if you have dogs, if you have anything, first off, before trashing that food, feed it to your animals. Animals usually have pretty hearty stomachs. They can eat just about anything as long as it's not nasty, like sitting there, you know, moldy for months on end. Don't do that. But I've done that all the time for my dogs because I eat obviously very clean. My dogs eat clean. If I have extra food that's going bad in the fridge and I don't want to eat it, I don't feel comfortable eating it, I just feed it to them. They absolutely love it. That way you're being more frugal and less wasteful, and you're not putting things in a garbage cans that are just going to fill it up when you're already trying to figure out what to do with waste. So that's the first thing you need to address. Also, too, you need to make sure that you can essentially start living smaller, meaning decluttering your life and learning to do with what you don't need. The goal is to eliminate everything that doesn't directly integrate with survival or happiness at that current period in time for that while something's happening. Keeping it simple, the more stuff to maintain, the larger perimeter you have, the more fancy of things you have to keep, means you have to work on all that stuff, and that's less focus on important tasks that are happening. Also, too, the next stop, and obviously I didn't put this in there, but is food. Obviously, you want to have food. I like stored food like we have in buckets. You can even buy rice and beans at stores and bucket those. There's lots of different options, lots of different things you can do with it, but make sure you have stored food and have the ability to have that on hand if you need to do so. Another thing you need to learn how to do is learn how to stop bleeding and treat wounds. I took first responder class. Basically, I graduated from it. It was like an 8-week class years ago. And when I got out of college, I took it later on. Very intriguing class, learning how to run tourniquets, learning how to do sucking chest wounds, all types of different things. That is a huge, huge thing, in my opinion, that a lot of people don't go over. It doesn't matter how much food you have, how much water you have, how great you are, so many different things. If you can't survive because you're bleeding or your family's bleeding to death, it's going to be a very, very short-lived incident if you can't handle that. So making sure you have the ability to apply tourniquets, how to pack wounds, how to keep wounds safe and clean, none of these skills will do you any good if you can't keep your cool and adapt to the situation. So that's another big one. Also, too, learning how to start a fire, how to maintain a fire, how to build a fire. Even if you are not necessarily in the woods, you may be in a more urban area, you can use things such as broken doors, windowsills, clothing, cotton swabs, extremely other flammable items. Just about anything will burn, just makes you understand what's toxic and what things burn safe and what things burn smoky. Another thing that a lot of people do not address, in my opinion, and that is cooking under the radar. Without a doubt, from many people that I've talked to, this will be one of the most difficult things to do when you start having a large amount of people that are very hungry. If you want to survive, it's important you learn how to cook and eat without being noticed. This is huge. Pretty much everything I've read from firsthand experience and from people I've talked to, they said, and this is biological, I mean, you understand this, once you start getting very hungry, you get ravenous, your sense of smell becomes very good. It becomes incredibly acute because you're trying to find something to eat. That is your primary goal. So your smell becomes extremely sensitive. This is important. Know who lives around you. Know how to try to cook and keep things as discreet as possible. If you're cooking them in a house, if you have propane you can still use, if you have ventilation, this is something that's really important that a lot of people don't take into consideration. And know who your friends are. Know who you have in your neighborhood. Avoid problems by hiding your stockpile. Don't tell anybody that you have anything, as far as even the nicest, most honest people can turn on you. And five ways to cook without people smelling it. Also, too, learn how to do some type of booby traps or security defense. I've talked about this recently in the past, but a lot of times they're very easy to make. There's a lot of different things you can do to blend in the environment with them, whether it's covering holes in the stairs with old carpet if it's in a house, whether covering holes in the ground with grass like a deadfall. Simple traps and signal traps are extremely important in rural areas as well to alert you of something that's going on, if somebody's coming in the perimeter. Dogs are awesome. I absolutely love dogs. You always want to strengthen weak points. You want to funnel people into open areas that are easily to defend. If you have areas that you have, say, like bougainvillea plants or hedges, you need to be able to try to fortify those as much as possible and push people into a funneled area for security if they come in that way. If you ever seen the movie 300, it's a very violent movie. It's good. I like a lot of stuff in it. The tactics are incredible in it. But when the Spartans basically go through what they call the hot gates, they have a giant basically wall on each side. It's basically a tunnel that they have secured, and that's how they fight off the Persians so effectively, because it funnels their numbers. He even says that in the movie. He goes, once they get inside those walls, their numbers account for nothing because they have no ability to flank us anymore. They have no ability to rush us anymore. We are basically an impenetrable brick wall. So that's one thing that you have to make sure you look at when you're assessing your surrounding areas. Also, too, navigation, maps, hand paper maps, compasses, no GPS, no Google, no phones is very important. Know your area. I always keep hard maps in my truck and in my bug out bag all the time. A lot of people don't even know how to read maps anymore. Get them. You can usually get them for free at AAA. Any of your areas, surrounding area, state area, United States, I usually keep a national map, I keep a state map, I keep a Central Florida map, I keep a city map, and I keep an existing area coastal map in my bug out bag all the time, because you do not want to be on interstate systems. If something goes sideways, your vehicle runs out of fuel, you break down, there's an EMP, you want to be able to take back roads to get back to the house. Interstates are a death trap. You don't want to be on them, and that's something that's really, really important. Also, too, staying unnoticeable and staying low profile. Obviously, you want to try to blend in whatever you're doing, whether you're bartering, whether you're trying to acquire different things, you want to blend in, whether that be with camo, whether that be whatever it is in your area, you need to know how to blend in. And also, too, as I said before, making sure you know how to cook discreetly, and also, too, you need to know how to barter correctly. A lot of people have zero negotiating skills anymore, especially in this millennial Generation Z timeline that we have. If you're bartering with something, this is information that nobody will ever talk to you about. This is straight sales 101 that a lot of people don't even realize. Say you have an MRE and you're trading it for a box, 20 rounds of 5.56 ammo, 9mm ammo, it doesn't matter. You're bartering this situation. So you're trading him an MRE, he's trading you for ammo. You know he has ammunition, he knows you have food. If that goes and it's a clean barter, cool, great. If he starts asking you questions or starts coming out of things like, hey, I got 1,000 rounds of ammunition, how many MREs would you trade me for that ammunition? Your answer always needs to be, sorry, I don't have but maybe one MRE left and we're going to be eating it tonight. I'm out of food. He just telegraphed you that he has a large cache of weapons. Even if he is lying or he's telling you the truth and he's probing you and baiting you to see how much food you have, the worst thing you can do is say, oh, wow, that's a great deal. I'll trade you 50 of my MREs for that box of ammunition. Now he knows how much food you have. Now he knows you have a glut of food. Now he knows where who to raid at the end of the night when everybody goes home. Very, very important you keep essentially what they call a poker face when you're bartering in a situation like that. You don't have anything. You don't know anything. You don't go anywhere. That's pretty much your mantra when you're bartering. That's something that very few people talk about, but that sales and negotiating 101 on a bartering hostile level. Just a few things. There's a ton of other information I could throw out there. Very, very important. You keep all of this stuff in your mind on a regular basis. Always keep a bag with some food, some bandages, some first aid, some tourniquets, some maps, some extra clothes, some water, basic necessities that you need. I keep one in my truck 100% of the time. If I travel out of the city and I'm in a different vehicle, it travels with me. Anywhere I go, I have it with me because it's something that I can use to get back to my house within about 72 hours or less and be fully stocked up, fully nourished, and still full of energy. I also keep the ultimate essential packets in my backpack, and I rotate them. They have the multiple, the B, the omega-3. Those packets are essential because even if you're eating MREs or you're eating food or you've got some stuff you've scavenged, your mineral balance and your B vitamins and your omega-3s are going to diminish very quickly, especially if you're walking 5, 10, 15 miles a day while you're trying to get back. Those vitamins obviously have an expiration date. So what I do, the ultimate essential packets, I rotate them about every 6 months out of my bag. I take the ones I have in my bag, I throw another half dozen in the bag, I use the ones and I rotate them like that. Same thing with protein bars, food bars, water, and so forth, because they get exposed to more heat while they're in the truck on a regular basis. But just something I wanted to add in there, because I've had a lot of people ask me about it, and I think those are really, really, really important topics that need to get addressed that a lot of people don't answer, Dad.
Excellent, excellent information, Austin. By the way, deer population around the United States is unbelievably being diminished with all kinds of wasting diseases. Now, people are saying, why is this happening with deer? Well, let me tell you why. Everybody's buying deer feed nowadays in rural areas to feed deer, and they're buying GMO corn. It's what it is. It's GMO corn. They're buying poison for the deers, and they're poisoning the deer. The deer don't know that GMO corn is poison. They don't know it's a pesticide, and it's destroying the herds, and they're getting very, very, very sick from it because it's destroying their intestinal tract. Here's an article that a letter just came in from Anita. She goes, I've been raising and butchering my own poultry for about 40 years, and I grew up in a second-generation hatchery. I raised chickens, ducks, turkeys, geese, goats, and horses. 10 years ago, I got a load of what I believe was triple-stack GMO corn. I had a 90% sterility rate that spring, and 30% of the roosters I butchered had tumors. Okay? From one winter of feeding, these birds included my bantams that previously set up for three broods at 98%. Now, for the last 10 years, I have a 25% sterility from the Roundup Ready GMO corn. I cannot get or afford the 500 bushels of corn I need to get, and all corn is GMO now. I try to feed as much wheat as I can, but the price is much higher. I talked to a local pig farmer. He fed his sows corn upon being bred, and his litter's reduced 50%. He now feeds the sows wheat before breeding. The reason I'm reading this, by the way, thank you for this article, Anita. I mean, is the reason I'm reading you this is that you've got to store food that doesn't have corn that's GMO. This stuff is so poisonous. I don't know what to say about it. It's that bad. But, guys, we're having a major, major kill-off of deer all around the United States. Why? Because we're giving them this poison. In fact, the disease-threatening deer population has spread to 26 states. It's called a wasting illness, is incurable, and can be spread among deer species, including white-tailed deer, an illness similar to mad cow disease that is so fatal to deer that it's spreading across the United States, worrying hunters, wildlife management officials, and scientists. It's a chronic wasting disease. It's incurable and can be transmitted along deer species. Guys, here's the thing. The reason it appears to be transmitting along deer species is because they're all eating the same food. I've got a friend of mine who's got a ranch north of here, and his deer population has been decimated. He believes it was the hunters because he had hunting leases on it, and he stopped the hunting leases, but the deer aren't coming back. Why? Number one, you got chemtrails, you got all this poison, you got this feed. I've got another friend of mine, he's got a large plantation up in Georgia, I think several thousand acres, and they bring in truckloads of GMO corn every year to feed the deer. And I used to get deer meat from him, and I don't even try to get it from him anymore because I don't want to be eating deers that have been basically raised on GMO corn. We've got to realize something, guys. This population of wild animals, they don't want this stuff to stay around. In the South, during the Civil War and during the Great Depression, the deer population was hunted almost to the brink of extinction because people had to eat. It's like Austin said, you've got to make sure people don't know you're eating, and you don't just set up a big spit outside and have the local, goat come in or cow come in and put it on the spit and have a big fire going. They're going to smell that from miles away.
Yeah.
You've got to be on the down low on this stuff, and basically if you have to cook sometimes, you may have to cook inside the best you possibly can over a small flame. Just make sure you don't die of carbon monoxide poisoning. Make sure you have ventilation to try to keep this smell from coming up. So very important. Also, Brad Parton sent me some information today. He said that Cortez basically has a degree in economics. Brad also sends me a lot of info. Has an undergraduate degree in economics. And I said, yes, communist social economics, how to basically implement Cloward and Piven to the maximum degree. More nonsense is being taught in our university systems. Guys, I love you. I appreciate you. Good show today, man. A lot of good information, Austin. You guys, thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for getting your multiple vitamins from us. So many of you sent me so many letters. We love the powdered multiple. We love the powdered multiple. Hey, guys, I love the powdered multiple, too. It's just a good product. It's easy to assimilate. I know Joe Hagman drinks like 3 or 4 glasses of the stuff every single day, keep him going instead of drinking coffee and, and caffeine. Guys, thank you for supporting us. Thank you for listening to the show. I love you guys. I prayed for you this morning, and it's my pleasure and my privilege to pray for you. I'll do the write-up, Austin. Go ahead and close.
Absolutely, guys. And I thank you so much for all the email feedback I get all the time. We do really try to do our best to respond, especially if we don't do it via email response. We try to do it on the show response. I try to answer questions, especially ones that I get multiples of, and it just makes it more efficient because obviously my time, I've noticed, is getting less and less and less. I have 24 hours out of the day, just like every other person in the world. However, my ability to use those hours as good as I need to is becoming shorter because it's becoming more full with different things that have to be done all the time, including the show, operations of the office, raising 2 kids, business, more business, and other options that I have going on in my life right now. So thank you guys for the support. Thank you for everything you do. Be sure to check out the website if you need anything. The chelation therapy is on product of the week right now, on sale for over 10% off, and we still have the Testo Plus, our maximum testosterone booster, on sale for over 20% off. Be sure to check those out on the website at healthmasters.com. We appreciate you guys. We love you. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. As always.